It's the Augusta Free Press, and it's on the air. From our studios in downtown Waynesboro, it's the Augusta Free Press Show.
Welcome into the Augusta Free Press Show. I'm Chris Graham.
And I'm Crystal Graham.
Big week this week, Crystal, as always on this show, but chock full of guests.
Always a good thing.
Yeah, as the weather turns from summer to fall. Yeah, I've been complaining for
weeks. I love it.
Oh, wow.
It was in the 40s last night. You can't get much better than that. Yeah. I know we took an evening walk, and I said, this is the life. This is the way it should be every day of the year. Well, where do you have to move to have it that way every day of the year?
I think San Diego has weather like this all year round, in the 70s or low 80s during the day. And
I was thinking
cool
just heaven. I didn't think there was any such place.
Well, from what I understand, San Diego can be very much like that. Joining us this week, as the weather turns from summer to fall, it's campaign season. We're past Labor Day, and we're into the time where the leaves are going to start changing colors, and political colors are going to start coming out. Aaron Symes joining us, Libertarian candidate for the 24th Senate District seat, and of course, we'll use that interview to talk to Aaron about issues in the campaign, state issues going on right now, but also got to promote the fact that we have arranged a candidates forum for all three candidates, Aaron Symes, the incumbent Emmett Hanger, and David Cox. For October 22nd in Waynesboro at Westwood Hills Elementary School. And so exciting news for us there. We've been working on this all summer, and we finally got a date down and a place down, and all the candidates will be there. We want you to be there, and of course, we want you also to send in your questions. We're going to be soliciting questions for the candidates, and can't promise we'll use them all, but we certainly will use a number of them for the candidates to give a chance to weigh in on the issue. So, but Aaron Symes will be here. We're going to try to have the other two candidates on in the next weeks as we lead up to October 22nd to premiere and promote that debate. Also joining us on the show is Bruce Joffe, a professor at Mary Baldwin College. He's written a book, A Hint of Homosexuality, Gay and Homoerotic Imagery in American Print Advertising. I've been reading this book, Crystal, and it's interesting because, you know, you assume that over time, we've gotten more accepting, maybe, of alternate lifestyles, I guess we could say, and in recent years, maybe more accepting, certainly, than we were a long time ago. But Bruce's book proves that really, especially in print advertising and in the media, in the early part of the 20th century and throughout the 20th century, that maybe we were more even open then than we realized. So interesting thesis there on Bruce's part. We'll talk to him more to explore that as we get to that interview. And also joining us today on the Augusta Free Press Show is Brent Finnegan, editor of HBurgNews.com. We'll be talking about some issues, lots of stuff going on in the Burg and Rockingham County. And Brent's going to kind of go down a litany of things with us as far as that goes. So busy show for you this week. And wow, big news for us, Crystal, with that forum coming up next month. We're hot and heavy into the campaign season ourselves here.
Well, you know, we've said that it seems like the election season has been a little quieter than we might have expected. I mean, I think the primary with Emmett Hanger perhaps had a little bit more heat on it than this election has seemed to. But, you know, I do expect the heat to turn up as we're moving closer to November 2nd. Talking with Emmett Hanger on the phone the other day, he pointed out that, you know, he was kind of waiting until after Labor Day, and then it just kind of snuck up on him. So I guess he's getting more into the campaigning. And I know Aaron Symes has been at it for a long, long time, for over a year, I believe, campaigning for this seat. So it'll be interesting as we move closer and having that forum right, you know, within a few weeks, I guess, couple weeks of Election Day is always a good thing for people who are still undecided.
Yeah, doing our part to keep the voters in this district, give them as much opportunity anyway to learn about the differences in the candidates and their approaches to government. So, well, we'll be right back after this with some of our guests, and keep it here.
Want to know what's going on? Check out our calendar of events and get the complete rundown. The Augusta Free Press, www.augustafreepress.com. Bring a splash of color to your home for fall. Home Innovations has beautiful Millmont moms right here in Fishersville. Come on by, mention this podcast, and get a free mom when you register for our HomeSense newsletter with helpful information for your home. As a bonus, you'll be registered to win $200 in free furnishings. Home Innovations, located on Route 250 in Fishersville, across from the library. We want to know what you're thinking. Comment on stories, vote in our polls, get the discussion started. The Augusta Free Press, AugustaFreePress.com.
Joining us now on the Augusta Free Press Show is Bruce Joffe. He's the author of a book that I just got a chance to read in the last week or so, A Hint of Homosexuality, Gay and Homoerotic Imagery in American Print Advertising. And Bruce, what gave you the idea to look into this topic?
Well, I'm a communication professor, number one. I teach marketing and advertising and things like that. So I'm always interested in advertising, and I've always been interested in subliminal messaging and so forth. But personally, I had come across a series of ads that grew to probably about 36 that were framed and hanging on my walls of ads that are in this book right now. And people would come and, you know, pass through, and they'd say, man, these things are amazing. You have got to do something with it. And the idea was to come up with a coffee table book, which, you know, people might say things like that, but when you try to find the funding or a publisher, you know, for a very small niche market like that, no matter how cool the ads are, there's just not really that market for it. But as an academic who does publishing rather than perishing, I kind of caught on to something that nobody had researched before. Nobody had looked into it. There is an organization called the Commercial Closet. They have a website, commercialcloset.org, and they tend to specialize in more contemporary ads that involve sexual minorities, but mainly broadcast and internet. Nobody had really gone back 100 years, 80 years, 50 years, and so forth, and looked at print advertising. So that's kind of how it got started.
It's interesting to me, as I read through the book, you know, I came to the book thinking, you know, we've become as a society more enlightened, more tolerant of different sexual lifestyles, different lifestyles in general. And so I thought, well, of course, so going back 100 years, there's not going to be anything there. I'm wondering what he's going to give to me here when I read this book. And what's interesting is, yeah, those subliminal messages, you say, dating back to the early part of the 20th century, and Ivory soap ads and BVD ads, of course, products that we are all well aware of today, it really jumps out at you that some of the images in particular really jump out at you and say, well, there's no way there wasn't an attempt to do something subliminal there. It really jumped out at me.
You know, people ask, do you really think that's what they meant to do? That no, it couldn't be, and so forth. But you have to remember that in those days, we didn't have the open forms of communication. I mean, you didn't have publications like The Advocate. You did not have a vocal community. You had a community that was put in jail, that was, you know, the intolerance for which ended up people, you know, would attach electrodes to them and give them electric shock therapy and so forth, so that to communicate with these people, you needed to use a certain type of coding. And so embedded in these ads, you would find things like certain colors, reds, red ties, and that, you know, certain wording like a friend of Dorothy and so forth that would communicate not to the typical consumer but to those in the know. Aha. Plus, I think, as always, creative and artistic people, there's a certain psychographic and demographic of that population, and many of the art directors, many of the illustrators, many of the copywriters, you know, from Madison Avenue and other places that created these ads, I think probably were gay and couldn't even help themselves, but to kind of impart to their advertising some of who they are.
Talking with Bruce Jaffe, a professor at Mary Baldwin College in Stanton and author of the book A Hint of Homosexuality, Gay and Homoerotic Imagery in American Print Advertising. Another thing that jumped out at me, wartime advertisements, World War I, World War II, and the images there that had those same covert, overt/ messages in them. I guess it might be easier in wartime advertising because you can mask what you're maybe trying to do subliminally with patriotism. That seemed to be the theme of those.
Yes, I think regardless of what other context or subtexts or whatever you would find, that historically during the war years for both world wars, the message that was driven home was, give up your seat to the soldier. If you can't find your cigarette at the stores because our soldiers need them, you know, the towels that you enjoy so much, if you don't see them at the stores because our boys over there need them. But there again, you're looking at an environment, a same-sex environment, much like, let's say, prison where okay, you know, there weren't there weren't women around, and at that time we didn't have co-ed service either in our military. So people from all over the country, from small towns, people that, you know, didn't know about other people that might have had similar feelings, were brought together and shipped abroad. And I think the opportunities and the environment were such that these kinds of things did occur, and I think came across when you look really closely at some of these ads.
Talking with Bruce Jaffe here on the Augusta Free Press Show. And now that we have, as you mentioned earlier, we have publications that can openly, you know, cater to, we can say, maybe certainly a market to gay and lesbians and bisexual, the alternative lifestyle communities. People don't have to be so covert about the different lifestyles that we have now, because society is more embracing. Do we still see advertising in the mainstream that has similar sort of imagery that is coded in a sense? I mean, are we seeing that in decline?
I think two things are happening. I think more and more people are realizing that there is a huge market that has not been untapped. And by huge, I mean, we don't even know the size of it, because regardless of what people might put on their census form, I don't think we really know the size of people who are same-sex oriented. We just don't know. You look at the news, and there are all these people that are married, and then, uh-oh, they've got some other interests besides, you know, and other attractions and so forth. So the advertisers are realizing that there is a huge marketplace out there. And two things are happening. You're getting ads that are running in mainstream media that really are targeted specifically, and no question about it, you know, to gay and lesbian people, or that heterosexual people can simply laugh at. One ad that, you know, that comes to mind is a commercial for, I think it was Miller, one of the beers, where these two really attractive young women are in a bar, socializing, and they're really eyeing this handsome, hunky guy, you know, who's kind of nodding at them and so forth. And the two women tell the waiter to send a free drink, a free beer over to this guy. And the guy kind of holds up the bottle of beer, you know, and nods and thanks. And then all of a sudden, sliding right next to him is his partner, who happens to be another male. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we're seeing these things on in mainstream, as well as ads that aren't quite so overt, aren't quite so obvious, you know. But I think the message is still there.
Bruce Jaffe, once again, a professor at Mary Baldwin College, author of A Hint of Homosexuality, Gay and Homoerotic Imagery in American Print Advertising. We'll have some information on the website, AugustaFreePress.com, about how you can learn more about this book and in the coming days. So thanks, Bruce, for your time today. It's great talking with you.
Oh, my pleasure. You guys have a great Thursday, Friday, and weekend.
You can't tell the players without a scorecard. Elections 2007, your one-stop shop for this year's elections. Wanting success is not enough. You have to take action. Join the New Dominion in Action Coach on September 25th for the eagerly anticipated Brad Sugars World Seminar Tour. No matter what your goal, millionaire, billionaire, or even trillionaire, you will learn how to make it a reality. Get your complimentary tickets today to Billionaire in Training. Register now at thenewdominion.com. The place to go to find local news and views. Our news and blogs link at AugustaFreePress.com.
Joining us now on the Augusta Free Press Show is Brent Finnegan. Brent Finnegan, of course, HBurgNews.com. He's the guru there. And hey, Brent, the big talk in the burg right now, of course, is the Martins. And you've been debating, and others on the HBurgNews.com have been debating, the pros and cons of having another big chain come to our area. What's the consensus right now?
Well, I think everybody in town is kind of excited that we have a Martin's. You know, I'm a big fan of Trader Joe's, but you know, I think there are some people out there that, you know, they don't like chains at all. And I think they're all valid points. You know, whether to get a chain in. A lot of people think organic food is really important, and you know, so sort of in the discussion on the blog today has just been, and yesterday as well, has been about you know, whether it's good to have these chains come in, whether, you know, Whole Foods is kind of snobby or not, you know. So it's been sort of comparing Martin's to Kroger and Food Lion and Whole Foods and Trader Joe's and that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's interesting how a new store coming to town can get everybody talking. I remember here in Waynesboro, where we're based, several years ago, Walmart coming to town. That's all people could talk about. We got a Walmart. Well, everybody else in America does too, so what's the big deal? But we finally got our own, and maybe there's an element of that whenever something like a Martin's or a Walmart, or, you know, there's all this talk at the new Waynesboro Town Center that there might be a Olive Garden coming to town. Why, you know, we get excited about that, yet we have local things that certainly do the same kinds of things that these chains do, and, you know, they might end up losing out when the new ones come.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, it's also, but I think that there are people who are diehard supporters of the Harrisonburg Farmers Market. You know, I'm a big supporter of that. And I, in my personal opinion, of course, is that local trumps organic any day. Because, I mean, some of these organic stuff can be shipped in from China or, you know, it says USDA approval, but how many, do they check every single apple? Do they, you know, they only check, you know, a certain percentage of the stuff that comes in from other countries. So I think organic is it's a good thing. It's, you know, it's sort of, I guess, associated with a more educated, higher upper class, you know, group of shoppers, which is actually some of the discussion on Hbird News today. But honestly, you know, for my money, I like it when it's locally grown, because that's actually better for the environment. You don't have to truck, you don't have to ship things from China or, you know, South America, and then truck them across the country to get them here. They're grown locally. So
yeah, carbon footprint not significant when you talk about local grown stuff. And of course, yeah, it tastes fresh. So that's a big element too. Yep. Brent Finnegan here, HBergNews.com. We're talking about some big stuff going on in the Berg and discussions on HBergNews.com. Something that I've been following on the website for several weeks now, discussion of local non-commercial radio stations and the ability for someone locally, maybe, or a group to get together and do something here locally that can actually have a local radio flavor. Wouldn't that be interesting in this age of Clear Channel to be able to do that?
Mm-hmm. Very much. And this is actually sort of the initiative of Kai Degner from Orange Band, who's also a contributor of Hbird News. And he found out about this, that basically what's happening is in October the FCC is opening the window for citizen groups to apply for full power, FM, non-commercial, educational frequencies. This is a very rare opportunity to bring a full power community radio station to Harrisonburg. And there are places that in Northern Virginia it's not even available. And technically speaking, in Harrisonburg, it's not available either, but it is in large portions of the county. And so there's been some discussion about whether or not to have something that's sort of based in Harrisonburg, where you have a website where you can post podcasts and stuff. And so it's an online thing in the city, and then in the county it's broadcast.
Interesting concept. I love the concept. Of course, that's sort of what we're doing with Augusta Free Press Show. We have a New Dominion show as well, sort of guerrilla radio, local stuff, local people talking about local issues. And, you know, really in this day and age, and I mentioned Clear Channel's name, there are a number of entities out there like that. In TV and radio, it seems like the bigger things get, the smaller the opportunity for people like us to get into it is. And so it'd be great to give a local voice to local people again.
Very much, and I think this would be a really cool opportunity to get the community involved and sort of have user-generated content, because almost everyone has a PC or a Macintosh, and they can put in, you know, you have a little microphone, you do your little podcast, and you can submit that. And the idea that we're trying to develop is people can, from their home, submit their own content, submit their own either talk shows, you know, local, anything of local interest, or, you know, national interest. It could be a political talk show or whatever, you know. I like the idea that these users can generate this content, and, you know, it kind of has a crossover with the website as well, so.
I'll say this, even if we don't get to the stage of a full-fledged radio station at the beginning stage of this, I think the idea of just starting something that's a user-generated website that creates content is a way to go as well. And I know I can speak from personal experience. The reason we're even talking right now is because somebody as dumb technologically as me figured out how to get on here and do this. So if I can do it, anybody can do it. And, of course, we'd love to have more voices. The multiplicity of voices is what makes our democracy great.
Definitely. And it also, you know, monopoly on that information and the dissemination of information, which it's something that I talk about a lot on Hinchburg News, and something that I believe strongly in, that, you know, this, there is a possibility of user-generated media. You know, you don't have to have a degree in journalism necessarily to do this. So it's something that I think is exciting, and I really hope pans out. I mean, if the application is accepted, then there's a 3-year period between, you know, accepting, getting that application accepted, and then actually being on air. So you have 3 years to get all your paperwork in order and everything. So
yes,
it'll be a ways off, but I think there's a definite, this is encouraging to see this.
Yes, it is. Brent Finnegan of HBergNews.com joining us here on the Augusta Free Press Show. Talk about the 45% rule and how it applies to restaurants that, of course, we don't have bars in Virginia. We do, but we don't technically have bars in Virginia. So there's this rule, and it applies to a local business in Harrisonburg.
Oh, yeah. This was actually the one of the top stories in The Breeze, which is JMU's twice-weekly paper. The news editor for that paper did a story about Rocktown Grill, which used to be called Highland Pavilion, which before that was Blue Fox. And it just, what they've started doing was, there's a $5, you could call it cover charge, but it's basically a $5 food ticket to get in the door on Thursday nights, because that's one of the most popular nights there. And that's sort of what the story was about. And that's, you know, I drew attention to that on Hinchburg News, and that's sort of been the discussion on Hinchburg News about the 45% rule. Basically states that, you know, you have to have 45% of your food. There's really no such thing as a bar in Virginia. I mean, anyone that goes out drinking or knows restaurant owners probably already knows this, but I think a lot of people don't understand that there's no such thing as a bar in Virginia. You can't just walk in and order a drink like you can in New York City or a lot of other places. And, you know, I think a lot of people, maybe including myself, see this as being sort of a little archaic.
Mm-hmm.
This is what one local, you know, restaurant has done to make up for this, is sell food tickets at the door. So you have to basically, it encourages you to redeem that $5 food ticket for food, and thus they increase their food sales.
I'll agree about that rule being archaic. I wrote a piece for the most recent New Dominion print magazine about the smoking ban idea in Virginia. And, of course, this year, Tim Kaine, the governor, attempted to amend legislation that would have essentially banned smoking in all restaurants in Virginia. And the big fight against that was from people who are technically bar owners. Well, not technically. They are de facto bar owners. Technically, they're restaurant owners. And they say, well, it would kill our business if people can't come to bars and smoke. And one reason for that is we have this silly law in the books that says there are really no bars in Virginia. They all have to be restaurants. And so as a result, we can't go to restaurants now, actual restaurants, without having to worry about no smoking sections because we don't have bars in Virginia. It's a weird way of getting around. Why can't we just change that law?
It really is. And then you have all these, you know, places like Rocktown Grill that are doing these sort of creative ways to get around that.
Yeah.
And I think it's a headache for a lot of bar owners, and you're constantly having to be balance your food with your alcohol, and make sure you're not doing too many alcohol sales. And obviously, if you have more business at night than you do during the day, then your alcohol sales are going to be higher. So,
yeah.
That 45% rule, where you have to, you know, food and non-alcoholic beverages have to account for at least 45% of the gross sales, is just sort of, I wouldn't be surprised within the next 5 or 10 years to see this come up in General Assembly and eventually just get kicked out. Because actually, one of the things I drew attention to was an article that was published earlier this year in Brick Weekly, which is based out of Richmond, and that was basically that the ABC doesn't really have the manpower to enforce this rule anymore. So it's sort of an honor system type rule anyways, and I think a lot of the bar owners and restaurant owners are just playing it safe by you know, complying with the rule, but because you definitely take a risk if you to get audited. And I think they used to do a lot of, you know, auditing to make sure they get all the food receipts and make sure that it equals 45% sales. But I mean, if they're not willing to enforce this rule anymore, then I think that's sort of a sign that eventually in General Assembly they're going to kick this rule out, and you will see bars in Virginia eventually.
As much as both of our Democratic and Republican legislators and political leaders in Virginia like to call Virginia a business-friendly state, here's one way to make ourselves even more business-friendly, and it's already in place as it is, de facto, so we might as well go with that change. I agree with that.
Very much.
Well, Brent, we got so many things we could talk about. HBergNews.com for our listeners out there. Check it out. Every day there seems to be something new popping up that definitely will get you talking. So, Brent, thanks for your time, and we'll have you back on again soon.
Thank you.
Your portal into the valley, the Augusta Free Press, www.augustafreepress.com. Looking for a diamond in the rough? At this sale, you'll find more diamonds than you could ever imagine. Mark your calendar now for Saturday, beginning at 9 a.m. Join the Wayne Theater Alliance for an executor's auction of antiques, valuables, and other personal property. Auction will take place at 513 Bader Avenue in Waynesboro. For more information, including an extended list of items available, visit WayneTheater.org. That's WayneTheater.org. You can't tell the players without a scorecard. Elections 2007, your one-stop shop for this year's elections.
Now joining us on the Augusta Free Press show is Aaron Sine. Aaron is a candidate for the 24th Senate District seat in the Virginia General Assembly this year. He's a Libertarian and be challenging Emmett Hanger, the incumbent Republican, also David Cox, a Democrat in that race. Aaron, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I have to say first, the promotional kind of thing here for us at the Augusta Free Press. Aaron will be taking part in the Candidates Forum October 22nd at Westwood Hills Elementary School in Waynesboro with Mr. Cox and Mr. Hanger, and we'll get a chance for people in the district to come out and hear what you guys have to say about the issues of the day. So thanks for being willing to be a part of that.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm looking forward to it. I think that's going to be one of the real kind of capstone events right before the election, so it should be a great time.
Well, thank you, for being a part of that. Of course, you've been engaging with the voters for the last about year and a half, I guess we can say, when you first made your intentions known regarding running for this seat. And I want to get your opinion. First off, there are a few issues in state government that certainly deserve attention, and one that I've picked up on, I'm not sure other people have picked up on much yet. Governor Kaine, in a speech to the money committees of the General Assembly last month, noting, of course, we're currently in a budget shortfall situation in the current fiscal year, also last year, some issues with budget projections, and really not anything in terms of actual growth in revenues, just how much we projected too much in terms of growth in revenues, and so having some issues there. He also hinted that in 2008-2010, as we get ready for next year's biennial budget discussion, that there might be some issues there too, and I'm just wondering if this might be a repeat of 2004. I wanted to get your thoughts. Have you been following that situation, and what do you think as far as the money situation in Virginia?
Well, I think they're laying a lot of the groundwork to repeat 2004, when, of course, we had a very large tax increase passed, and you know, that tax increase has been one of the defining events of this campaign, really, in terms of shaping the debate in this district. And I think that it would be a real shame if we repeated that, that same debate with that same outcome. But I think that there are a lot of people who are trying to shape it the same way. I mean, as you noted, this is not a problem of declining state budget at all. In fact, in the last decade, the budget has gone from about $18 billion to we're up to almost $37 billion now, I believe. So the budget has more than doubled. In fact, the revenue projections that Governor Kaine is talking about really based around the fact that the General Assembly in the last budget predicted, my understanding, about a 6.5% rate of growth this year in tax collection. Instead, we're experiencing somewhere around a 3% rate of growth in tax collection. And so we've got a shortfall in the hundreds of millions of dollars. Well, that's still a increase in tax collections. We're still collecting more money than we were before from the taxpayers. The budget is still going up. We're still increasing spending. So to frame the argument, I really even dislike the word shortfall in that discussion, because it implies that the government is getting less money than it was before. But no, in fact, all it really is happening is they made overly optimistic projections of how much money they'd be able to take from taxpayers, and now they're paying for it.
Talking with Aaron Sime here on the Augusta Free Press Show. Aaron running for that 24th district seat in the Virginia Senate in this November's elections. I've not been hearing as much about this in this particular race yet, but a big issue statewide, it seems, as people compete for seats in the Virginia Senate and the Virginia House of Delegates, illegal immigration. Certainly a number of localities in Northern Virginia taking the initiative on their own at the local level to try to study illegal immigration, even take some actions to step up their local law enforcement of illegal immigration. We've seen some proposals thrown out by the Republican Party to supposedly deal with the issue. Want to get your thoughts here in the 24th district. We have a growing immigrant population, and certainly a number. We don't know what that number is in terms of people who are maybe here illegally, undocumented aliens, and that kind of thing. Want to get your feeling on this issue and if it needs to be addressed here at the local and 24th district level.
Well, there are some things that we can do. Of course, illegal immigration is primarily a problem at the federal level, and what the reason that we're seeing so many local governments and state governments trying to address the problems because the federal government clearly is not. And so, you know, their unwillingness to address the border issues is kind of forcing the hand of local and state governments who are really dealing with a lot of the burden of the expenses associated with illegal immigration. And so while, quite honestly, I think there's very limited amount of things that local and state government can do to truly address the problem, it's, you know, that a lot of them are trying to do something to at least send the message, even if it doesn't make a big impact. And there's a number of those things that I do agree that we can do. I think I have no problem with us allowing local law enforcement to work with INS in terms of checking citizenship and that sort of thing. I think that's perfectly reasonable to allow. At the state level, one of the things that has come into the discussion on this race is offering more benefits to illegal immigrants, and specifically how trying to redefine the language regarding in-state tuition so that illegal immigrants in certain situations would be able to get in-state tuition. And that's something that I disagree with very strongly. I do not believe that we should be rewarding illegal behavior with benefits that we offer to law-abiding, tax-paying in-state students.
Talking with Aaron Syme here on the Augusta Free Press Show. Aaron, again, running for that 24th Senate District seat in the Virginia General Assembly. A big issue that's come up, I think, since the last time we talked, the driver fees issue. It was interesting. It was passed as part of the transportation compromise earlier this year, signed into law by the governor. Really, it wasn't until mid-June or right around July 1st that people started noticing, hey, we're going to start getting fined, not just fined, but have to pay fees related to some even basic driving offenses in Virginia. And, of course, I'm sure as a good libertarian, you have some issues with fees being assessed in this kind of a manner. But just want to get your feeling, what you're hearing from voters, as much as you're engaged with voters, what are you hearing from them, and what would you do? Some people are saying outright repeal those fees. Others are saying maybe we can tweak it a little bit. What are your thoughts there?
Well, I certainly have heard a lot from voters about this. Since, like you said, it's since about the June timeframe, maybe the issue I've heard the most about from people when I'm talking with them. That and the property tax issue are probably two of the biggest issues that I've heard about from people. And I do think we should repeal them. I think it's bad law. I think it's a sneaky way to try and increase state revenues without having to pass a tax increase. Now, unlike my opponents, I do not favor increasing the gas tax to compensate for getting rid of the driver fees. To me, I don't think we need to do either. I don't think the fees were needed, and I don't think a gas tax increase is needed. If you look at the, it's hard to predict exactly how much money the abusive driver fees will generate in fees to the state, because if they have a positive effect of causing people to drive safer, then it may not, meet the projections. But, one of the projections I've heard is about $50 million that the state would raise annually from that. Now, earlier I mentioned the state budget has increased from 18 to over $36 billion in the last decade. So the reason the House of Delegates went with driver fees was because they were unwilling to pass a tax increase, which I agree with them on, but they were also unwilling to make the difficult decisions of cutting spending. Or just cutting the rate of growth of spending, even, really. That $18 billion increase in state spending that we've had in the last decade, the $50 million raised by the abusive driver fees is 1/3 of a percent of the increase in the state budget over the last decade.
Yeah, that's a good way to put that in perspective.
That is a very small amount.
Yes.
To put that in perspective. And so I find it very hard to believe that we can't find 0.33% of waste to cut over the last decade. We don't have to cut, you know, big programs or even abolish programs to get rid of these driver fees. We just have to spend money a little bit more efficiently, and, you know, cut out a little bit of that increase in rate of growth. People don't realize these driver fees are a very, very small portion of the increase in our state spending. And so to say that we can only repeal them if we were to replace them with a gas tax, I think it's just insincere and is, quite honestly, kind of disrespectful to the taxpayers to imply that government can't get 0.33% more efficient and instead we have to raise your taxes. I just find that unbelievable.
I think the words bait and switch come to mind when I think of that. Well, we'll take this away and put this in place and it'll be even better for you. So,
I think that's a lot of the politics going on behind it, absolutely.
Pay more at the gas pump every time you go, or we'll hit you if you drive 15 miles an hour over the speed limit.
Nobody talks about that third alternative of just cut some spending.
Yes, indeed. Well, Aaron Syme, thank you for joining us once again, October 22nd, forum at Westwood Hills Elementary School in Waynesboro. Lots of information will be about that in the coming weeks on AugustaFreePress.com, also NewDominion.com, our sister website. Aaron, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you. I'm looking forward to the forum.
You can't tell the players without a scorecard. Elections 2007, your one-stop shop for this year's elections. Get informed. The New Dominion and Augusta Free Press are sponsoring a 24th District Senate Forum. David Cox, Emmett Hanger, and Aaron Syme will debate the issues on October 22nd at 7 p.m. at Westwood Hills Elementary School in Waynesboro. For all the details, visit AugustaFreePress.com. Headlines from across the valley, the morning edition, weekdays at AugustaFreePress.com.
I want to thank our guests once again, Bruce Jaffe, Mary Baldwin College professor, Aaron Syme, running for the 24th Senate District seat, and Brent Finnegan from HBurgNews.com. And now we're going to move into the part of the show where we go over our morning edition, which is up on the AugustaFreePress.com every weekday morning, 9:30 or so at the latest every morning. Headlines from newspapers and blogs from across the area, important stuff, what's going on in the valley in Central Virginia, and Stanton's been really active lately in the news. Charlottesville also, in one respect, a couple of issues that the two cities are working on independently, and it's interesting to me to note. The payday loan issue. Now, the state General Assembly, the last couple of sessions, the payday lenders and the high rates they can charge people for the loans that they offer has been an issue. Of course, the industry has been successful in fighting back basically attempts to repeal them from even being in existence, which we've seen in states around us. North Carolina, for example, a couple years ago, repealing that industry essentially by capping the rates. Well, since the state's not taking action, Stanton and Charlottesville, as cities, are attempting to take action as far as regulating the capping the interest rates they can charge within their cities. And it's an interesting approach, I guess. I mean, we're seeing the same kind of thing in Northern Virginia with regard to illegal immigration. Towns and cities and counties up in Nova are attempting to deal with something that the federal government and state government haven't been dealing with. We're seeing the same thing here. I'm interested to see how these things turn out and if there might be any legal challenges to it. But interesting development there in both of those cities.
Right. It's interesting and also interesting because it seems like legislators are, you know, state legislators are coming down on different sides on this issue. You know, I can't remember another instance in Stanton where they were trying to regulate something of this nature, you know, capping what, you know, interest rate they can charge and kind of, you know, kind of talking about the corporate side of that, you know, getting involved in that. And I know Chris Saxman spoke out earlier this week against it, saying that, you know, that he's not sure that, you know, the city should get involved, that the city should try to put regulations on businesses in this regard.
And Steve Landis says he supports, and of course I've known this because I've written several stories on this topic for the Augusta Free Press and for the New Dominion about the issues at the state level, and he has supported the capping those rates, and which essentially would put the business out of business because their profit margins are based on the high interest rates they can charge. But it's interesting to see the localities taking the lead here. And, you know, as much as I say that this and the illegal immigration issue being dealt with by cities, towns, counties, whatever you want to say, is interesting to me. I wonder about the legality of it.
On the other hand, government's supposed to be local. You know, all politics, as Tip O'Neill, the former House Speaker, once said, is local. And so maybe this is something that a groundswell will be needed to make the state take action here. So we'll have to follow what's going on there as that goes on. Now, another issue in the news, we'll be writing this as our top story for the week, which will come out tomorrow on AugustaFreePress.com every Friday. Top story on AugustaFreePress.com, another Stanton issue. We've talked about this on the show before, but a pornography store, adult store, whatever you want to call it, preparing to open in the city of Stanton. And next week, next Tuesday, the Stanton Republican Committee is hosting a forum on this to give citizens, I guess, some information and a chance to speak out on the issue. Really, as I'm determining in the work on this story, there's really not a lot to do about this particular store. It's in a area zone for business. It's within regulations, and so it's just public pressure that might.
Right, and you said the only reason this kind of came up between city council was because of a sign permit, because they wanted some kind of signage above and beyond what's allowed where their location's going to be.
That's correct. So this store could already be operating if not for that request for a sign permit. So, but you know, this is something though where the community is speaking obviously very loudly, and you know, just from a business perspective, I'm not too sure that it's something that's going to last. The availability of that material over the internet, over for people who have satellite TV or cable TV, which is pretty much everybody these days, is such that you just wonder if video stores in general aren't doing very well these days with all the competition from cable and from satellite and from internet. So from a business perspective, I'm not sure it's going to last. Also, the community pressure perspective, you know, a small town, small city like Stanton weighing in such overwhelming force against this store. So, you know, the odds are against it anyway, but it's just, I guess it's maybe good in a way to see the people speaking out. You know, we don't always have to agree necessarily with how things are done, because sometimes, you know, sometimes the people speaking might be something against what might be right or wrong. But it's good to see people taking interest in their community. And so next week, next Tuesday, at the Stanton Republican Committee Forum at Stanton City Council Chambers, there'll be a big discussion. More information on that in our big story tomorrow in Augusta Free Press on AugustaFreePress.com. So much else going on, Crystal, but we're going to cut this short today because we've already run out of time with all of our interviews. I want to thank all of our guests. Thank you, Crystal, for being here. I want to thank our listeners for listening in.
And we'll talk again soon. The Augusta Free Press Show is a production of Augusta Free Press Publishing, all rights reserved. For more on the Augusta Free Press, check out our website, AugustaFreePress.com. That's AugustaFreePress.com.